and welcome to the latest Money and Politics podcast, which has been recorded on Monday the 15th of April. It's around 7 o'clock or so. So this week's episode looks at the last two Ardèche speeches. So that's the speech of Micheál Martin, which was last Saturday at the Fianna Fáil Ardèche, and Simon Harris at the Fine Gael Ardèche a week before then, just which was a couple of days before the Dáil elected him as Taoiseach. Now, although Mark Twain mightn't be the first name to spring to mind when considering speeches by Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, bizarrely enough, it's the name that comes to my mind. And the reason for this is because of a line that's usually associated with Mark Twain, actually sometimes appeared as attributed to Blaise Pascal, but for the purposes of today's podcast, we'll assume it was Mark Twain. And his comment was, quote, "I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one instead." And in both speeches, Harris and Martin delivered scripts that were, to my mind at least, far too dense and far too overpacked with unnecessary detail. And as a consequence, both men delivered speeches at a high speed and at a pace that left the home viewer struggling to catch up. And indeed, not only that, not only were the speeches too dense, not only was the speaking rate of both men far too high, I think in Micheál Martin's case, at one point I thought it hit 165 words per minute. And in Simon Harris's case, I think it hit about 155 to 157 for most of the time. But the speeches were also written and packaged and put together to be informative and demonstrative rather than being persuasive or motivational. So put bluntly, both speeches were of the one for everyone in the audience variety, with long lists of achievements or of future promises covering most policy areas or covering the policy areas that the parties regard as being of importance to them. I think that's a mistake, and I think it's been a mistake in the last few of these speeches I've reviewed. Because I think it's better, or I think it would have been far better advised, certainly for Simon Harris in his first speech as party leader, to have tried to set out not his policy priorities, but to tell the public who he is. And in a small measure, he did that, in fairness. That was the beginning of it. He started telling his own personal story. But I think more importantly, he should have looked to frame his speech in terms of, we've been in government for 13 years, but here are the options before you. And here is why my party and the offering I'm putting before you is a better choice than the other choices available, which is either from Sinn Féin or from the independents. And I think that would have been a far better direction for Simon Harris to go. In Micheál Martin's case, well, unfortunately, past history is an example of future activity. And Micheál Martin, every speech he has given since he became leader nearly 14 years ago, just over 13 and heading for 14 years, every one of his speeches has been of this: here's my views on this policy, here's my views on that policy, here's my views on this area, here's my views on that area. Now, you can argue that was the habit of Fianna Fáil Taoiseach before him, so like Bertie Ahern's speeches tended to be a little bit of that variety, before that Albert Reynolds and Charlie Hawley. But the difference is, back then, a party leader's speech was 1 hour long. And so they would have had maybe 20, 30 minutes to set out a broad overarching vision and then give us a half hour or 40 minutes of one for everyone in the audience. And unfortunately, this time around, with speeches, been an average of about 22 to 23 minutes in terms of delivery time. It seems that both men have decided to go for squeeze as much into that 22, 23 minutes. And I think that's not a great policy. Now, as I said, this was Micheál Martin's 10th speech in his near 14 years as leader. While maybe we should expect this from Micheál Martin because it's been his modus operandi up to now, I think it decidedly odd that Simon Harris, who we're all assured is a great communicator, chose to do the same thing. Now, by the way, the sobriquet great communicator, sometimes that can often be seen as a euphemism for something else or something less. And wasn't Boris Johnson often hailed as the great communicator? And, well, he turned out not to be. However, back to the two Saturday night speeches. Now, as I said, neither one scrimped on either facts or stats. But is that really the best diet to be serving to a less than interested viewing public on a Saturday evening? I personally think not. Though I think maybe the point here, and maybe it's a broader point, which is that the Saturday night Ardèche speech is no longer the keynote or is no longer the important element. It's kind of the price that the party leader has to pay to get interviews the following day. Because I think when you look back on it, that Micheál Martin's two interviews on The Week in Politics and This Week, and similarly Simon Harris the week before, were far more informative and of a far better gauge of what they stood for than what they said on the Saturday night. Now, by the way, I've waded through both these speeches. Probably three or four times I've watched them from end to end, either to check the timing or to gauge the reaction of the folks at the hall or to see, does the script match with what was delivered? And I can assure you that you'll get a far better understanding for what those two leaders are about from listening to those Week in Politics and This Week interviews than going through the speeches. Indeed, this maybe helps explain why Sinn Féin isn't choosing to do an Ardèche between now and the local and European elections, and that they've decided to leave their Ardèche speech off. But perhaps they've kind of concluded that they don't need the This Week interview and the Week in Politics interview because that's not necessarily their audience, and their audience lies elsewhere and probably more reachable through social media. Now, I said earlier that both Harris and Martin's speeches were filled with statistics and data and facts, but maybe not those facts stand up to quite the same scrutiny. And what I mean by that is, like, take these two contrasting lines in housing. Because while Micheál Martin framed his party's record in housing since 2020 in the following terms:
in the last 4 years, more houses have been built than in the previous 9 years combined. There is more to be done, but that is real momentum.
Simon Harris described that same achievement this way:
under Fine Gael, the number of homes being built has increased sixfold. The number of social homes has increased more than tenfold. But we need more homes and we need more home ownership.
Now, I would argue, and I think any fair-minded person would agree, that Martin's description of what's happened in the last 4 years is far more accurate than Harris's. However, as he kind of got from that clip I just played, the Taoiseach was in such a rush to get to his next line and to deliver the script within the allotted time that he once again undersold a key line. I happen to oppose the programme for government. I thought putting Fine Gael back into government was a bad idea. But Fianna Fáil argued, and indeed Micheál Martin at the time persuaded some 70-odd% of the Fianna Fáil membership of this, that it was key to put country above politics and to go into government with Fine Gael. That was a party, by the way, that had been twice rejected by the voters. Because Micheál Martin argued, and the people who supported the programme for government argued, that by doing so, they were going to impose a major policy shift on housing. So if that's the point, and if Micheál Martin feels that that decision, which has cost Fianna Fáil in the opinion polls since then — Fianna Fáil is now running at, what, 17, 18, 19% in the opinion polls, compared to 22.5% at the last general election, and bear in mind, that was a really bad performance. So if that's Micheál Martin's key belief, then why blurt out this key achievement without punctuating the point? That particular line, that single line, that in the last 4 years more houses have been built than in the previous 9 years combined, that should have had the crowd in the hall on their feet. It should have had the people in the room shouting approval of their leader, validating their own decision for the programme for government, and congratulating ministers on pushing through a major policy shift. But it didn't. Micheál's line was not delivered to an applause break. There were no cheers. Instead, the Fianna Fáil leader ploughed on with his very busy text to talk at speed about the Help to Buy, First Home and Vacant Property refurbishment schemes. Now, each of these policies, each of these areas is very, very worthwhile. But I think none of them are as important as the key political point. However, this isn't the only problem with going for a shopping list approach. When you opt to have one for everyone in the audience, then you better deliver one for everyone in that audience. And though both Harris and Martin took the same approach, I would argue that Harris probably did it more effectively, certainly in rhetorical terms. Indeed, this was most evident on the two occasions where Harris directed his comments to the audience at home. The first one of those was in his assurance to people with disabilities that their voice would be heard. And the second was his call to action, directed at those watching at home, asking for their trust, support, and especially their votes, in this phrase:
To you at home, I want to directly ask for your trust. I want to ask for your support, and I want to ask for your vote.
Looking back at both speeches, I think the two men should have heeded the advice of Bertie Ahern, when he showed up at the Fianna Fáil Ardéis when he was asked about his advice to Simon Harris as Taoiseach, and when Bertie said that he would advise him to take on just a small number of issues.
Take a small number of issues and do the best you can on those issues. You try to take too many issues, you get spread too. And it's very hard. There's always the unpredictable, so.
Well, I happen to think that the same advice applies to the delivery of speeches. Now, by the way, this is not to say that Harris was more convincing than Martin. He might have been a little bit more effective in the rhetorical flourishes, and frankly, while Harris's writers may have served their man better, the script they delivered to Simon Harris was loaded with far too many clichés. And this is a point succinctly made by Pat Leahy in this tweet. She hit the delegates with a barrage of platitudes, hit the ground running, match vision with action, stand by our values, fix housing once and for all, we will move mountains, we will not stop until we finish the job. It was cliché central. To his credit, and I don't often use those words these podcasts, Micheál Martin's gravitas and his more assured and polished delivery made up for the dense paucity of the scripts that he was working from. And when you look at the list of themes Martin highlighted in the script, you can see that these were largely dictated by the cabinet portfolios held by Fianna Fáil ministers. So for Micheál Martin, there were sections on housing, education, health, agriculture, finance, foreign affairs, and even the Gaeltacht, a portfolio now held by Thomas Byrne to some cheers, well, some muted cheers from the audience. There was one that merited no mention by the Taoiseach whatsoever, and that was defence. And this is deeply ironic because it is the portfolio, the responsibility held by the Taoiseach to himself. Yet he could not be bothered to make even a passing reference to it. The only time defence appears in his script or in his delivery, it's in the form of cussant, which is saying that Thomas Byrne will defend the Irish language. There was no mention of the recruitment and retention crisis in the defence forces, no mention of his plans to shred Fianna Fáil's long-standing commitment to the triple lock. Not that the singular defence reference in Simon Harris's script was all that important either, comprising just one non-specific promise to do more to support and resource our defence forces. No mention whatsoever from him of the decade-plus neglect of defence by his political party. Indeed, ironically, Harris's speech focused almost as much on Fianna Fáil policy areas as Martin's. Harris was forthright and clear in parking his policy tanks, in fairness, empty tanks, on the lawns of Fianna Fáil departments, with Harris making big ticket pronouncements on housing, agriculture and health. The one non-Fianna Fáil held department to get a major mention in Harris's speech was justice, with Harris pivoting to reposition Fine Gael as the party of law and order. It was a pitch, don't forget this was given a couple of days before he became Taoiseach and announced his new cabinet. It was a pitch that led many in the commentariat to see Helen McEntee's time in justice as coming to a close a few days later. And indeed, the fact that McEntee has continued on as Justice Minister is rightly seen as evidence that Harris's Ardéis speech was less about substance and all about messaging, but a messaging with an even shorter shelf life than that of a TikTok video. The fact that Micheál Martin did not mention crime or the Gardaí and had nothing to say about what happened in Dublin in the riots a few months earlier, despite the presence in the hall of one of the highest profile and most effective Fianna Fáil Lord Mayors in Dublin in decades, truly puzzles me. As does the lack of any direct reference to a distinct Fianna Fáil position on migration. Micheál Martin did talk about migration, but he talked about it in terms of the European Agreement and of the European Pact. Despite his party producing a policy document on migration, one that was largely framed by comments and analysis from Jim O'Callaghan only a day earlier, nothing from that comment was included in his speech. And bear in mind that that policy paper had formed the basis of the front page of the Irish Independent last Saturday and a large story inside where tribute was paid for John Lahart for producing the document. Before I conclude my analysis, let me kind of turn to some of the numbers on this one, because I've done this over previous years and I've looked at the speeches by the numbers. And I think it's important just to point this out, which is both Harris and Martin actually kind of went for the same speaking race. Both their scripts were just as dense. But I think there's a couple of points in this, and I'll deal with one of them immediately afterwards, that are important. So for Micheál Martin, allowing for his warm-up, which was delivered by Barry Andrews, the actual maximum slot he was given was 22 minutes and 34 seconds. For Simon Harris, who was introduced, significantly maybe, by the European Commissioner, Mairead McGuinness, the amount of time available for him to speak was longer, was almost 2 minutes longer, with 24 minutes, 48 seconds. So what did they do with that time? Well, across Micheál Martin's speech, he had 23 applause breaks. And that meant that about 2 minutes and 18 seconds of his 22 minutes, 34 seconds was taken up with audience reactions. In Simon Harris's case, the number of applause breaks was almost double. It was 43. And the amount of applause time was over double, with 5 minutes, nearly 40 seconds taken up with applause time. So that meant Micheál Martin had an actual speaking time of 20 minutes, 16 seconds, where Simon Harris had an actual speaking time of just below 20 minutes. During that time, Micheál Martin spoke 3,350 words. Harris, 3,000. Number of sentences in Micheál Martin's script, 412. Number of sentences in Simon Harris's speech was surprisingly low at 218. When I listened to it, I thought that there were far more full stops in Simon Harris's speech, but when you sit down and look at the script, not so much so. So as I said, as I mentioned earlier, that meant Micheál Martin was speaking at a rate of about 160 to 165 words per minute, with Simon Harris speaking at a slightly lower, but not terribly effective rate of about 150. As I pointed out in previous analysis, the comparable figures in, for example, I think it was Keir Starmer at his Labour Party speech, was speaking at about 100 to 115 words per minute. Nicola Sturgeon, who I think is one of the most effective public speakers and one of the most effective deliverers of a conference speech, her speaking rate was just under 100 words per minute. Mary Lou MacDonald, who I don't regard as being a particularly effective orator or a particularly effective speechmaker, her speaking rate was just under 100 words per minute. And the whole point about this is, I think the slower you speak, and look, as anyone who's listened to these podcasts knows, I'm not a great exemplar of slow speaking. I tend to speak far too fast. But if you're speaking at a conference speech and you're addressing an audience at home, I think the slower you deliver it, the more chance you give of people to pick up what you're saying and to take something from it. And I think that slower, more studied, calmer, more reflective delivery allows your audience a great lot more time to actually get up and cheer, and that helps you. But I think it gives a greater sense to the people at home of what it is you're saying. I can think of a couple of points that I've mentioned earlier from Micheál Martin's speech that I didn't take out of it from just sitting at home and watching it. I had to listen to it twice and actually read the script while watching it to get some of these points out of it. And I don't think that is a particularly effective craft. Though, as I make the point earlier, maybe there is less time put into a leader's speech nowadays because the party communications teams and the party apparatchiks think it's far better to get the interviews the following Sunday on The Week in Politics and this week, and to get some coverage in the newspapers on the Sunday and more importantly on the Monday. They think that's far important than just somebody watching the speech on the Saturday night. Now, I talked about earlier the key actors, which is obviously the speechwriters and the party leaders. But there's another important actor, and that's the audience in the hall. Because their reaction, their loyal approval of the key lines and the key phrases, their reaction to certain points, basically helps subliminally make the point to an increasingly disinterested viewer at home that the thing they're cheering to might be more important than you realise. That the line that they're reacting to is something that people should be listening to and should be paying attention to it. Now, there's kind of a little parallel here, which is not a fair one, which is a little bit like the dreaded laughter track in a sitcom, because that can point you to where the writers put the jokes. And similarly, the whoops and hollers of the party faithful help tell the viewing public that this is the important political takeaway. So when viewed in this context, as I said earlier in the stats, Harris's speech was the hands-down winner, with the Fine Gael crowd cheering and clapping twice as much and for twice as long as Martin's slightly more jaded and maybe borderline apathetic cohort. It's easy for me to say this and base it on stats, but let me play you two clips that I think broadly bring this home. And the two clips are important because they're the audience reaction to basically the two leaders making the same point. Both leaders saw as important as talking about what's happening in Gaza. Both gave equal importance, though at different points in their speech. They gave equal importance and equal prominence to Ireland's position on this and its intention to recognise the Palestinian state. So it's a key moment in both their speeches. As I say, their messages were almost identical. But listen to the audience response in both cases. Listen to how Simon Harris maybe makes the point more succinctly and clearer, a greater signal to the people in the hall, this is an important point I'm making. Micheál Martin couches us a little bit more. He's essentially making the same, actually he's not essentially making the point, he is making exactly the same point, we intend to recognise Palestine. But he nuances it a little bit more and possibly reduces the reaction of the audience. Maybe the other point to bear in mind is when you listen to the two clips, is you can kind of tell that there's more people at the Fine Gael Ardèche than there were in the Fianna Fáil one.
Tonight from Galway, I reiterate that Ireland stands ready to recognise the state of Palestine.
And I will soon bring to government a formal proposal in coordination with other governments we have worked with throughout this conflict to recognise a Palestinian state.
And so there you are. That's my quick overview of the speeches. They weren't bad. However, I think for a government that, in my view, probably has no more than 6 months to run, but even at the very maximum has certainly no more than 10 months to run, I think it was a missed opportunity by both leaders. As I say, maybe this is an unfair comparison, maybe this is an unfair exercise, maybe the key thing to do is to go back and compare and contrast the This Week interviews and the Week in Politics interviews. It's actually quite interesting, as having listened, particularly in Simon Harris's case, having listened twice, or maybe three times now that I think of it, to his Week in Politics and his This Week interview from Sunday week back, he gave almost identical answers to different questions in both separate interviews. He clearly has more rehearsed lines in his mind than Micheál Martin is. I think Micheál Martin is strange enough, though you wouldn't think it from his speech and you wouldn't think it from his very rushed style of delivery at the Ardèche. I think Micheál Martin is far more on top of his brief, that he can extemporise a lot more in a whole range of policy areas and a whole range of topics. I have to say, for two men who've been in government for the last 4 years, and clearly two men who are trying to set out the parameters and the broad scale of their forthcoming general election campaigns, whether that's in 4, 6, 9, 12, or not, can't be 12 months, 11 months, 10 months, I think they missed an opportunity. I don't think it was clear. I don't think either man attempted to frame the options facing the voters at the next election clear enough. I think in both cases, although they were setting out policy frameworks for their next manifestos, clearly in both cases, their eye is on what's happening at the locals and Europeans. And that's what, 50-something days away. And both of them know that they need to manage expectations. Because going into the next local and European elections, well, we'll take the local elections first and I'll come to the Europeans in a second. Going into the next local elections, Fianna Fáil goes into it as the biggest single party of local government. Fine Gael comes next and Sinn Féin is far behind. And I think maybe both Harris and Martin fear that neither of them will emerge as the biggest party of local government in 2 months' time. They're not sure whether it's going to be Sinn Féin or possibly independents as a broad group who will end out as the biggest single element in local government, and that worries them. Fianna Fáil have about 270 council seats. They're running 340 candidates. About a third of those are first-time candidates. Fianna Fáil might be looking at coming out with 200 council seats. That's a loss of 70 seats. Bear in mind that at the time of the last local elections, the Fianna Fáil vote was somewhere in the region of 26.5-27%. Right now in polling, as I say, it's 17%, 18%, 19%. That's a drop of a third. So losing 70 seats might actually be an achievement for Fianna Fáil. If they can keep their losses and keep their seats to just over 200, they might feel they might be able to declare some kind of a win. Fine Gael went into the last local and European elections with about 25% of the vote. They're now looking at 21%, 22%. Strange enough, I think they might be able to hold their losses to a minimum. But either way, Simon Harris will not get the same blame for a bad day with Fine Gael, because at the end of the day it was too late for him to turn it around. Sinn Féin, no matter how much the vote drops between now and polling day, are still going to have a reasonably good day at the local elections, because they had a really bad one in 2019. They lost half their council seats. They went from, I think, 150 back down to 80 or 90. Well, they should at least hope to get themselves back up to that 160, 170, 180, maybe even break 200. But all of this depends on how the independents are doing. And right now, all the polls suggest that independents have the wind behind their back, and that not only will they do well on first counts, in first preferences, that they should be able to pick up some votes in transfers. In the European elections, things don't look as rosy for Fine Gael. They go into these European elections defending five seats and probably would be lucky to come out with three. Though I made a reference to before, the European Council on Foreign Relations poll conducted a couple of months ago pointed to Fine Gael possibly emerging with two seats. Fianna Fáil goes into it defending two seats and is hoping, with a bit of a wind behind its back, to be able to pull that up to three seats. Now, that's not a great achievement, because last time around it had a disastrous election in Midlands North West, not helped by the fact that they left it until after Patrick's Day to select their candidates. It is about management of expectations from the locals and Europeans at the moment. But maybe that's a topic I'll return to on a future podcast. I've got two or three podcasts lined up over the next 2 weeks. One of those will be on defence, and an issue that clearly neither party leader felt important enough to feature in their or their speech, but I think is a policy area that seriously needs to be looked at. And it's an area I've spoken about many times before, but I want to bring together a lot of the events of the last couple of months and to crystallise them into where we now stand, particularly in view of discussions that are happening in Europe. And then we'll start doing a gradual countdown to the locals and European elections, looking at each of the parties, but more importantly, looking at what's happening at independents. But as I say, they're podcasts for the upcoming weeks. So in the meantime, I hope you enjoy this podcast. Hope you found it informative. I'd be delighted to hear your feedback and any comments you have to make. But hopefully I'll be back with a podcast, if not next Friday, certainly next Monday. But in the meantime, take care and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.